This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3321 for Monday, the 26th of April 2021. Today's show is entitled DNS 66 and Random. It is hosted by Operator and is about 32 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, I talk about DNS 66 and go over some comments from Random episode.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello and welcome to the episode of Hacker Public Radio. Your host, Operator, I'm going to be talking about DNS66 for Android and blocking ads. So this is in response to the podcast U-Random, and Taj was talking about that now I'm obligated to do a show on it, which I've been using DNS66 for a while. And I've got some comments that will probably help some people out, and I can put them in the show notes too. But anyways, I'm going to kind of follow up on some other stuff too. But anyways, Todd had mentioned some of my comments from the U-Random podcast, which if you haven't watched it or listened to it, I mean, it's a great show. There's a lot of good chemistry there, and they've been around since 2016. So there's tons of stuff. I actually had to go back and tell which one was, who was Todd and who was Lyle. I can't remember, and get them swapped out. So now, anyways, I've got the names with the voices. But anyways, let's see. Talk about the Brave browser. I'm actually going to look that up and see. Well, I guess I'll do that at the end. So I'll get to the meat and potatoes first. So we're talking about DNS66. DNS66 is a lot like, if you remember, for you kids back in the day, there's a thing called a host file, and you could add a bunch of blacklists to, add stuff to your host file. And instead of that DNS request going out for, ads.google.com, it resolves locally to this Etsy host file that's kind of a, networking standard thing. So that was the technique early on to block ads. Now we've got, all these weird content providers and all that stuff, and it's really hard to block ads nowadays, so you have to do real weird JavaScript stuff and look for specific keywords and scripting languages and whatever. But anyways, back then it was just DNS and all the ads were hosted out of one place. So if you had a block list of servers big enough .coms, then those would resolve locally, which would point you to the local host. Now there's other stuff like if you have a whole house proxy, you can set up the whole Pi-hole, which is an app that has a bunch of DNS stuff in there, and it pulls from all different places. And what I actually tried to do was parse out all the domains and IPs from every single input file that feed for ads and whatever that Pi-holes had. And I had this, it was like a 60 meg host file. Well, obviously in Windows, every time you do a DNS request, it has to look up that, 60 meg file, and it completely took the system down to a crawl. So, that just because you have something doesn't mean you should go crazy with it. Anyways, so if you have like a, 5 meg or 60 meg, some ridiculous DNS file, then it's not going to work. But anyways, getting back to topic here. I digress. DNS66 is a local VPN, so things have kind of opened up for Android over time, allowing more access to low privilege apps. So you can do overlay stuff. So I can create an app that will search for objects on other applications, I think. So that gives you the ability to basically do whatever you want across multiple apps. I'll give a good example of like any of those apps that clean up your clean up something and they delete something and they ask for the escalated privileges, that's when they're pulling that that security, they're escalating their privileges so that they can have access to things like clearing cash out or ending processes or killing tasks, and they do it a bit wonky to where they click around the UI to clear out cash and stuff like that, because without root, there's not a whole lot you can do. I mean, it's limited to what access you have, and these guys are working around that by kind of hijacking your interface, the input devices, basically. So they're moving around, they're moving, for the lack of a better term, they're moving their mouse around on your phone and clicking these things, and that's how you grant them access to do whatever. So what I'm saying about DNSX6 is it's one of those apps, it's a good example of taking the minimum, the little privilege that you have within within a phone system, which is great security, or better security than we used to have, but giving that access to a program that you trust to do stuff. So they open that up for VPN, which is a virtual private network. Anyways, the idea is that you set up a VPN and all your traffic gets encrypted and nobody can see what you're doing, whatever. I just think everybody's watching anything anyways, especially if you have a VPN in the States, and even outside of other countries, they're probably just copying the traffic from there to wherever, just assume. So that the purpose of this VPN is that it's a local VPN. So all of the traffic that sets up for DNS66, when you request a website, it goes through this VPN, and that allows you to control the traffic, at least at a DNS level, to do whatever you want. Now, I don't know if there's any other applications that would be something that would process JavaScript, right? That would process encrypted JavaScript and stuff. Which, it's going to break a lot of things, and I'll talk about that later. But the idea there is that you would basically have complete visibility into all the scripting that goes across the browsers and applications, within reason. I could probably tie it to just the browser. But anyways, I guess we already have that somewhat with uBlock and things like that. Anyways, when you say, for example, you go to a website, there's a bunch of ads on there. That local VPN goes through, pulls the traffic through that local VPN, which all it does is it kind of sets a similar host file. It blacklists specific DNS sites, specific ad providers. So it comes with a few in there already. And I think I've tried turning them all on before. Some of them don't actually exist or aren't able to be downloaded from what I remember. I had to add my own that was more inclusive. So I think even the ones that are already in there weren't aggressive enough for me, which makes sense because the problem with blocking DNS and things like Pi-hole, a lot of stuff is going to go not right. It's not going to work. You're going to get a lot of instances where stuff just won't work. And I don't know what people are doing when they have Pi-hole set up, but you're going to have a bad day eventually. But then I might be wrong. But for all intents and purposes, my mouse is going crazy. For all intents and purposes, the DNS66 stuff will need to have more, what do I want to say? More, better filter. And I think the filter that I'm using right now, I don't know which one it is, so I'll just list off the ones that I have in here, and one of them is not the default. 7blacks host file, addaway host file, which is addaway for Android. I think that's the one I added manually. Dan Pollock's host file and adhell, A-D-H-E-L-L. Those are the ones I have enabled right now. And I'll talk about my Pinterest one too. So anyways, once you start the app, you start the VPN, and then you pick, before you start the DNS66, you pick which host files you want, and what providers you want, what blacklist or ads providers you want to use. And I feel like the ads ones weren't really all that good, but I didn't do a whole lot of messing around. I just knew that I wasn't super happy with what I had, so I think I added the addaway one. I'm pretty sure that's the net new one. So you pick out which ones you want. You can also set which applications bypass the VPN, which I'll talk about my issues later, but you can pick which applications bypass the VPN. And more importantly, you can set a custom DNS server. So even if you have a local host file, you could, for example, set your DNS to your house, and maybe your house is running, you know, some kind of advanced ad blocker or whatever. DNS-based ad blockers. And then if you wanted to use, you know, some other DNS besides your phone's provided DNS, you could do that in here also. There's not a whole lot to it. There's probably more that you can do with it, because this is very exciting to me, because this allows you to have complete, the theory is that this would allow you to have complete control over the network traffic coming across, and that's when I'll go into the issues I have with it, or not issues, but just problems I've had, and I've had to work around them. The first thing I noticed is that sometimes it'll just get weird, specifically with Google, I think Google system applications, things like Play Network, part of the anything within the regime of Google, seems to kind of get weird sometimes. So if like I'm trying to do something really secret squirrel, like pay for an application, I want to say I've had issues with that. So like if I try to, and of course it's not really going to do anything right now, but I feel like I've had issues with like doing Google stuff, and it not working. For example, I want to say Duo, which is, I don't even want to get on about it, but I've been forced to use Duo, which is Google's whatever. And I'm pretty sure Duo doesn't like it, because you're taking that traffic and you're pushing it to somewhere else. And so a lot of that has to do with CPU intensive, very CPU intensive. And that might be the problems that I'm having. Cause you're taking full motion video when your phone is already struggling. You're receiving and sending full motion video, through things like Teams and these apps that want more than, you know, three windows of full motion video. Your phone is struggling, right? Excuse me. Your phone is struggling to keep up with that. So, what I'm assuming is happening is there's too much traffic going across the VPN, local VPN, and it's eating up all the CPU on the phone, and then it's acting wonky. That's probably more of what's happening now that I say it out loud. But I did notice that it's like sometimes stuff gets weird with like Google applications or streaming. I will say that when I get phone calls now, since it's a different episode altogether, but since I was using Hangouts Dialer, they're getting rid of Hangouts Dialer and all the phone stuff in Hangouts. So I had to switch to regular Google Voice, and I've been using that. Unfortunately, it's not the best, but when I receive and send phone calls now, I have to turn off the VPN, even though I have Google Voice in the bypass list. It doesn't seem to work. So there's probably other applications I need to bypass so I can actually make the phone calls not get destroyed. So anyways, when I send and receive phone calls, unfortunately, I can't use my phone as a phone because of all the ads and BS I have on it. So I have to turn off DNS66 to make or receive phone calls. It's fine in the beginning, but I have to turn it off because I'll start lagging and blipping and blooping all over the place because the CPU is trying to keep up. Let's see. I will provide. The original reason I was doing this is that I wanted offline blacklisting of Pinterest. And I don't know how I fell into DNS66. I might have seen it on a Reddit post. And I'm a Reddit late bloomer. If you want to understand something or figure out a hackery way to do something, for whatever reason, Reddit has become that medium. So, you know, you're talking about like Stack Exchange and stuff like that is more for like programming and server-based stuff. But if you're looking for like client-side hackery and just, you know, I want to do this with this application, guarantee you there's a Reddit app or a Reddit post that someone's asking that same question, and four other people answering it in four different ways. And I think I fell into DNS66 for that reason. And I started to I didn't start to get frustrated. I had been frustrated with Pinterest for, I don't know, 3-4 years now, because every single Google search is a Pinterest result. And that's by design. That's not by accident. So I have it blocked here at the house. I have it blocked on my phone now with DNS66 and my wife's phone. So if you were accidentally to click a link in Pinterest, guess what? It's not going to do anything, more or less. And there's a whole long story about getting all the DNS servers for Pinterest, but there is a lot of them, and a lot of Pinterest servers out there, and domains, subdomains, things like that. So if you just block the main Pinterest domain, no, you'll get .eu and .io and .il and all the other languages, plus other domains that are weird, subdomains that are weird. And even to this day, even with my list, I still somehow managed to get Pinterest sites to come up. I think the login site I need to block, or one of the login sites is not blocked, or their API site's not blocked or something. Anyways, I'll provide the Pinterest. I think I've got the notes in here. I'll provide the Pinterest stuff to block. I think that's pretty much for DNS66. I've been using it. I have the auto reconnect set up. Like I said, sometimes something will get wonky, but it's very few and far between. Here recently, it's just the Google Voice. It would basically destroy my phone and give me no internet for a while, and then I would, even after rebooting the phone, the internet wouldn't work. So it's like very odd the way that it was screwing up the phone. Other than Google Voice, I think that's pretty much it. I want to talk about the Brave browser, evil stuff. I don't know anything about that. While I talk about that, while I look that up, I want to talk about the script that I made for Windows that can also be written for Linux, or cross, rewritten for Linux. Brave browser really that bad? What is the consensus on Brave browser? Find themselves, politics, liberal, not use their browser. Various schemes such as when you type a URL, cryptocurrency link to browser at one point will redirect you to a different URL that generates money. Well, I've seen that time and time again. I had a famous, I'm talking about Brave now, and reading, sorry. I had a famous, for a while there was a browser-based AV scanner that was beautiful, and it was called Panda ActiveScan. Now, if anybody's seen Panda, it was, I think it's, I want to say it's like from Mexico or Chile or something like that. I don't think it's developed here in the States. It was developed here in the States. They're still around, but nobody uses them. But you had your, like, kind of the malware killer, what's the famous one everybody talks about? Adblock or Malwarebytes. When Malwarebytes and whatever the other one that used to be popular started getting super popular, you had all these AV players in a space that were just like money grabbing to try to find people to buy their services. So you had Symantec, Norton, all that, but then you had like all of these guys were getting into the AV space because that was like everybody needed AV, and just viruses were everywhere and everybody had pop-ups and all that crap, and people were trying to get their hand around the whole, ads and potentially unwanted software or programs and all the ad bots and all that. Anyways, these guys were called Panda, and they had a client, and I purchased their regular client because I loved it. It was a good lightweight thing, but it did do that thing where if you type in a URL wrong, it would redirect you to like a Yahoo search for whatever you typed in wrong. And that was through the AV. So the AV was the proxy for all of your web traffic. And I'm sure they did other things like that. But you know, even at one point my ISP was doing that, and I have, if you want to block, when you type in the DNS name wrong or website name wrong and it goes to an ad, that is not you. That is not your phone. That is not your computer. That is your internet service provider taking a bad DNS request and redirecting you to an ad revenue generating ad. So I know Charter was doing it. If they're not still doing it, you Google. It's called bogus DNS. And basically, the idea is you can set up in most as a DNS mask. When you set up a DNS server, you can set up bogus DNS. And that will, you get the blacklist of all the Charter DNS servers that are in that list. And it will, if it resolves to those IP addresses, it will say that that's a bogus DNS, in the bogus DNS list, and it won't, it'll just give you a 404 or whatever. So the way it works, you get a list of all the DNS servers that you get redirected to, basically, or the ad servers or whatever it is you get redirected to if you type a website wrong. So it's a catch-all, a wildcard, for example. So if I type bleh.com and nothing comes up, instead of them saying 404, they're like, hey, let's cash in on this. And people do it. And people that set up hotspots and stuff for a living, I've heard stories of people getting $200, $300 a month because they set it up to so there's, you know, ads on every page or ads on the portal, or you type DNS wrong, it goes to their ads, which, I mean, to their, just, it's not funny, it's not nice, but I mean, it's one way to make money. And I just didn't particularly like it. So I used the bogus DNS stuff on the server here at the house. I don't think I've had to do it here recently. So, maybe it's built into Ubiquiti stuff, or maybe Charter quit doing it. But for a while there, you type in a wrong DNS and it would take you to the wrong thing. Anyways, it looks like the Brave browser is just doing the same thing. They're money grabbing and doing all this kind of political crap. You know, they're evil corp, right? Let's see, the Pinterest stuff I'll drop in. Oh, YouTube DL script, sorry. I didn't go explain all of that. Let me just bring up the script. This is the easiest thing to do. I'm supposed to be doing chores right now, so I don't have a whole lot of time to do notes. That's why I'm all over the place. This is what it's like if I do an ad hoc episode of Hacker Public Radio. So my script for my bat script, which is a Windows script for YouTube DL, is for Windows, obviously, but that same logic can be applied to Linux. So I'll briefly go over what it does. You don't need wget. Let me go through the calls. This is just a hacked up batch file. It downloads wget, which most every Linux distribution already has. ARIA-C2, which is a multi-stream downloader. So think of it as torrent for normal files. So I can request, you know, 16 different threads to the same file and download it 16 times faster. Usually that's not the case, but you're more often than that, you're surprised. I actually upped it from 4 threads to 16 by default, in the GitHub, I think. Anyways, I set it to 16:16. So 16 times 16 is how many things you can download at once from 16 different websites. You can download 16 things from 16 different websites, and it'll have that many threads going at a time. Anyways, so ARIA allows you to download multi-threaded download something. So for example, if you were to single thread download something from YouTube, it's going to be fast, right? But it's not going to be as fast as a bunch of little files or a bunch of little short requests. I think Charter or Comcast calls it boosting or something stupid. But I know Charter recently kind of got on that boat, meaning that if you request a small little tiny file, it will download it at a phenomenal speed. That's why Usenet, and that's a completely different episode that I've probably already done before, why Usenet is so fast, because you're taking 20 different threads and downloading little tiny files with each one of those 20 different threads, and it's exceedingly fast. So whereas if you were to download a single file from a non-website, and this is the whole net neutrality thing, I think, a single file from a, you know, non-streaming provider, it would come down at 2 megabits, right? I get locked down to like 2 megabits of traffic. Anything that's not known, it might even be just like HTTPS and HTTP. If it's not HTTPS or HTTP, it throttles you down to 2, which is not good, which is not the full speed of the line. So what you can do to offset that is I can take, you know, 16 different chunks and download them all at 2 and max out at 20. I think I maxed out at 20, and this is the cheapest Charter connection we have here in Atlanta. And so instead of getting the file, you know, at 2, I'm getting it at 20, which is still not the full speed of the line because of the bursting and stuff. It still caps it out, but it's definitely better than 2. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, so what is it? 10 times faster, right? I suck at math. So that's what that does. So not only can you use YouTube DL, you can use it with RESC2 in most cases. Sometimes what I discovered is that the way the different parsers that get brought into the mix, YouTube DL is like a multi-stream downloaded parser thing. So when it analyzes a URL or analyzes a site, it looks at it and says, either through whitelisting or looking at the script on the page or whatever, it tries to guess what the best way to download the media is, and it's pretty spot on most of the time. Sometimes I have to use a app called Bulk Media Downloader, along with, I've talked about these before, Bulk Media Downloader, and the other one you want is called Bulk Media Downloader and Turbo something or other, and I don't see it in here for whatever reason. Turbo Downloader, whatever. And those are but the same people. There's like addon.com, all spelled funny, and it's a bit sketch. But they, that's why I don't run as a user. I have a separate user that I run my browser with, so that way, if anything happens with the browser, then my system is still protected because I'm running it as an internet user. And I've run the browser as a different user than my home user. So if and when, you know, a plugin gets compromised, like what's the one that recently got compromised? The one that I like to like, NanoBlock and NanoBlock is one of the ones that got used for, you know, spam or whatever. It will, won't infect my home machine. It will just infect that internet user. Anyways, so Aria, we got the multi-threaded stuff. We use FFmpeg, which is it gives you better control and options for your media. So what you get with FFmpeg is things like, I think, the ability to pull subtitles and stuff. You also get I want to say subtitles. I don't know where FFmpeg comes into play. I just know that it allows you to do certain things that the regular YouTube DL project doesn't have. Or if you want to extend command lines out for FFmpeg specifically that isn't supported by YouTube DL, you can tell it to do that through FFmpeg. So anyways, that's the FFmpeg piece. Let's see. After FFmpeg, we check to see if it's updatable. So we run YouTube DL-U, and that will update it. And then it pulls in the list of all the URLs and does this really long whatever. There's a comment in there that's called, like, I think I got rid of it. Linux... YouTube DL. So I have a remark, and in front of that remark it says Linux, and that's the same, basically the same command, almost verbatim, but it's missing the start parameter, and that's really all it does. So you could essentially modify this script and swap out like 3 or 4 different lines, and make it a bash script that will do everything you need to do. But this automatically downloads through, I think, PowerShell? Yeah. I think through PowerShell it downloads wget, and then wget it uses to pull the latest ARIA and FFmpeg through wget. Wget's a great tool to download stuff from GitHub without needing Git. You can do filters. So this is a really, actually, this bat script is a really good example of how to use wget to download stuff as a downloader. So I have like some filters in here for FFmpeg so that it downloads the right, you can use regex filtering. Oh, my headset died, I guess because it wasn't getting any input and thought that I wasn't using it. But since I'm just using the mic, the headset cut off. So that's interesting. I think I did HPR about this headset. It's really cool. Other than it cutting off when I'm trying to do an episode of HPR. So, FFmpeg has regex filtering, which you can do all kinds of cool stuff, which essentially means I can pick out what I want to download from GitHub, and with some magic, you can download, kind of use wget as a get tool. So that's what I'm doing there. Instead of pulling down a get binary and checking out the get, I just pull the zip down and unzip it and then go from there. YouTube DL is downloaded straight from YouTube DL. That's pretty much it for YouTube DL stuff. We covered browser, we covered Pinterest, and we covered YouTube, and we covered DNS 6.6, so I think we're good. I know I was all over the place, but at the end of the day, check the show notes for the URLs that I use for DNS 6.6. And if it doesn't work, if you're having issues, you can always just disconnect the VPN, see if it works, and then reconnect it, and then know that you need to either bypass that application or you need to figure out a way to, you know, turn it off when you need to use it, which I do for Google Voice right now. So anyways, it's a long episode. It's supposed to only be like 15 minutes, but I randomly went off tangent a few times, and that's what happens when I do an ad hoc HPR. So I hope you guys learned something. If you have anything to add, again, I would like to see something where I have script control at the VPN level, where I can decrypt all my traffic locally, pick, for example, specific apps that I know are ad heavy, and do advanced, you know, PCAP style filtering on them to take out scripting languages or take out ads. That would be interesting to see somebody, if there's a project out there already, almost like a better cap but for Android, would be really awesome. And I wouldn't need to have to set up like Knox and all kinds of crazy crap to look at the traffic, because I could just look at the traffic on the phone locally, or even, you know, dump it to a PCAP file or whatever. Anyways. That's pretty much it. Y'all take it easy, and check out your random if you haven't. It's a great show. Great people. Later. Bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.